Great to see you today. We are talking about milk. Here we go. Making milk, canine lactation. So today we are going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about what exactly milk is, focusing specifically on canine milk. We're going to talk a little bit about how it's made, when it's made, which is very important and often a point of confusion for breeders. How does it vary throughout puppyhood? And it does vary throughout puppyhood. And finally, what can go wrong and what can we do about those things if something does happen? So let's just start with milk basics. So what is this thing we're talking about today? So milk comes in kind of two colors. It is either an opaque white or it's a yellow white fluid. In dogs, it is quite high in fat and protein. They are carnivores, and you see this amongst carnivores, that they have higher fat and protein than omnivores like us or herbivores. I'll show you some of those. So meat-eating animals versus grass-eating animals or people that eat anything. It's secreted by the mammary glands of female mammals. There's a couple of other types of milk in the animal world, but mammals are pretty impressive in their ability to do this. And it is the essential source of nourishment for offspring during the neonatal period and a little beyond. So that's at least the first 3 weeks. And then it continues on to weaning, and weaning is really considered a transition process, not a point in time. So it's typically going to be between 4 and 7 or 8 weeks of age. The fascinating thing about milk is it mirrors the needs of the young of a species. So in this case, puppies. And there's a really interesting study where they had they took a bitch that had 28-day-old puppies. And they swapped out her puppies for 2-day-old puppies. They did this actually with multiple bitches. And the milk and the bitch transitioned back to treating a 2-day-old rather than a 28-day-old. So there's a really fascinating interaction between the puppy and the dam and the dam's body. Milk isn't just one thing. And I think I'll emphasize this a couple times, excuse me, because milk replacer is just one thing. Milk replacer has one set recipe. I mean, you could vary between the milk replacers, but it does not change over time. And milk does. And so we don't ever want to think that milk replacer is better than actual milk for that reason, unless there's a problem with the milk. Making milk is a 3-step process. I know this is a little bit complicated and it's big words, but let's just think about the 3 steps. First thing is the mammary tissue needs to develop. That isn't constant in a dog. It only happens at certain times in a bitch's life. And that is controlled by progesterone and specific growth hormones. That's different than what's known as lactogenesis, or if you think about it, the start of lactation, and that's the production of colostrum and that very first transition to milk. That process is controlled by prolactin. And if you think back into the heat cycle course, you can go back there and look at when prolactin begins to rise during pregnancy. It's in the later stages of pregnancy. And just a reminder, it happens in non-pregnant bitches and pregnant bitches. That's why bitches that are in false or pseudo pregnancies can get milk. And then the maintenance of milk production, and that is not controlled. It is controlled a little by hormones. I'll walk you through that, but it is primarily the result of the puppy's sucking. And so we need to think of this in 3 pieces, development of mammary tissue, then the start of lactation, which is colostrum and first milk, and then the maintenance of milk production for however long it's going to go on. This is controlled by oxytocin and prolactin based on the sucking, and I'll show that to you next. So if we focus solely on the maintenance of milk production, which is usually our biggest challenge, we start with the sensory input, which is suckling of some sort. And suckling includes all of these behaviors. So it's puppies rooting. I'll show you a video of that a little bit later. It's going to be the nipple stimulation, kneading when they use their paws, massage, they're pulling. You'll see a great video of a puppy really into massage, and then obviously actual sucking. That then results in a physiological response on the bitch's part. And that is, so sucking goes up to the hypothalamus, and then the hypothalamus releases or talks to the pituitary gland, which releases oxytocin and prolactin. And that results in milk production and milk release, milk letdown. And both of these can break down, and both of them are essential for puppies to actually be able to nurse normally and get nutrition from their dam. The thing I really want you to remember today, I'm going to say it a couple times, is that lactation is a demand supply process. You've probably read the newspaper, or maybe you took an economics class once, and we're always talking about supply demand, which means that supply precedes demand in the economic world. In lactation, demand precedes supply. And that means if we limit demand by supplementing puppies, we will cut down on the supply process. So the more we supplement, the less milk our dam will make. And so if we want our dam to pick up the supply, we have to be very, very cautious and thoughtful in how we supplement. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. So where is milk made? It is specifically in mammary tissue that secretes milk, and that's called the parenchyma. And it's a specific kind of tissue. It obviously is located on the abdomen, and it is only present during pregnancy, false pregnancies, and lactation. So that process of mammary tissue development, which is controlled by progesterone, develops the parenchyma, and it's only going to be around during these periods. It also stays for about 40 or 50 days after weaning. And I often get this question, like, when is she going to tighten back up again? Well, chances are it's going to be a couple of months, several months after weaning before you're going to see her begin to tuck up. Begin. You still have all that tissue that then has to resolve itself. Initially, this tissue is pretty small for a first litter. And then for each subsequent litter, it becomes more and more developed, and maximum development's reached at 4 to 7 litters. And after that point, you aren't going to see bigger mammary glands, but you can see them during that period. That's just an aside, and we can talk about it at the end, but it means for those of us that show in conformation in a breed, in a non-coated breed, so a short-coated breed, let's think of Whippets and Weimaraners, et cetera. The more we breed, the less tuck up we're going to get back in those girls. And so if showing is your primary focus, then you want to be cautious in how many times you breed your bitch. Otherwise, wait till the veterans class or something, where typically that is more tolerated by judges, which is kind of sad. Just as another aside, that, if you think about our confirmation shows, they are the judgment of breeding stock. And so we should not be faulting bitches that have been bred just because they don't have their figures back. Where is milk delivered? It's delivered typically through 8 to 12 teats or nipples, and dogs are kind of unusual in the number of the variation in the number of teats that they have. Most species have a set number, 2, 4. There is a particular kind of rat that has 30, just to really sort of flip us out. But dogs usually are somewhere between 8 to 12. And these teats are attached to these gland complexes. And the gland complexes, if you can see my cursor, run parallel in the dog. We often call them in dogs a mammary chain. They really are these gland complexes. And so we're going to have somewhere between 4 to 6 of them. 10 is the most common number of teats in large breeds. 8 is the most common in small breeds. Teat patterns, we have 2 pairs of thoracic here. And the cranial, this upper one, are the least productive of the mammary glands. 2 pairs of abdominal here, and then 1 pair of inguinal. Those are the rear furthest back ones, and those are by far the most productive. Now, as we always say, bitches don't always read the book. So your bitch may have 7 functional teats or nipples, or, you know, maybe 13, but those are pretty rare. This is the most common. Now, how is milk delivered in dogs? It's a little different than some other species. So in the nipple, there are 8 to 20 irregularly placed, so randomly placed duct openings at the end of the teat. So that tells us something about why we have trouble sometimes with supplemental nipples, where we're trying to take a baby nipple, because baby nipples tend to have a single opening. And that can be too much for puppies. They're accustomed, or they are built for these multiple openings. So an option is, as long as you can get the hole big enough, don't make that hole bigger, or your puppies may aspirate or be unable to handle the amount of liquid coming down, but put additional holes in to assist them if you're finding they can't get enough out of the one hole. Interesting also in dogs is they have very few pain nerves on their nipples, which makes a lot of sense if you see those teeth. And just remember that the next time your bitch says, oh my gosh, I feel a tooth, but I am not going back in there. Just remind her that of most of the species, they have some of the fewest nerves. They have nerves that do other things, but they aren't necessarily pain nerves. Sometimes we have inverted nipples. We had a conversation with Janet Jeffries about this the other day with her toy poodle. This is an example of an inverted nipple. It's not completely out. It sort of tucks in. And the puppies may pull them out. These can be problematic. The puppies will often not put the work in to nurse on them because, if you think about it, if you can see my cursor at the very end of the nipple, this is where the ducts are. If they're inverted, they're really hard to get the milk out of. And so puppies may often quit on them, and you can end up with congested glands. Large breed puppies can usually pull them out. But if you're not seeing the puppy use them, you're beginning to see congestion in the gland, there are correctors, and we'll have them on the resource page. Janet put one from the UK on the Facebook page. I'll give you one from North America, or a couple from North America. And really all you have to think about is, how do I get suction on that nipple to pull it out and then put a puppy on it right away? And that's really key. You either have to pull it out and put a piece of plastic on it or something to hold it up, or you need to pull it out and put a puppy on it. And then they will typically stay out at that point. And then I know many of you have probably seen these tiny, completely inactive nipples. So you know, dogs have 8 to 12 and your bitch has 9. And one of them appears to be completely inactive and it doesn't appear to be attached to mammary tissue. In reality, the majority of these will eventually produce some milk. They won't be great. They'll never be as good as a completely formed nipple. But because of the way the mammary chains are formed in dogs, they can produce some milk. But they also can get very sore if the puppies are nursing and nursing and nursing and they're not getting much out of it and they're, it's a large litter. So you want to keep an eye closely on these for sores. Use nipple cream or lanolin on them to protect them as much as possible. How else is milk delivered? Well, initially it is delivered lying down. This is going to be the beginning of the nursing period. The bitch is going to lie down. It is okay if the bitch isn't on her back. In fact, being on their back is kind of abnormal and can be difficult for puppies. So this is a perfectly normal position. And puppies are actually built to be able to dive down and get to the bottom chain. And they can breathe under there. They can get milk under there. It's kind of amazing that they're underneath their mom's rib cage, but she's not lying on them because of the curve of the rib cage, but they're under all their litter mates. Some of them are really happy under there. There's a lot less competition under there than there is on top. So the one thing that you do want to do is make sure that your bitch switches sides. So if you find she's always lying on her right side, sometimes you're going to help her lie on her left side so that all the glands get emptied at the same rate. Within the first week, typically, now this is different in toy breeds. We'll often see this delayed some in toy breeds, but your bitch is going to begin to sit up. And that's perfectly fine. You don't need to make her lie down. This is actually beneficial for the puppies to have to begin to use their bodies in a different way. They are about as motivated to do this as anything they're ever going to do in their lives. So this is the way to begin to develop strength and develop perseverance and develop stick-to-itiveness in them. But you do want to keep an idea on your littlest puppies, because often they can't reach those front teats. So you're going to pull off a fat guy back here who will inevitably be back here. The big fat ones are going to be back here and the little one's going to be, you know, trying to jump up and get to a nipple. So you can do one of two things. You can pull off the fat guy and put him up front, but I promise you within a minute, he's going to be plowing his way back to the back. But the other thing you can do is just take your hand. I don't know if you can see my picture, but you're going to take the palm of your hand and put the smallest puppy in it and lift it up so that the puppy is lying just as if it was on the mat or on the ground, and it doesn't have to put that extra effort into trying to reach those front teats. Now, two problems. One problem is helping our bitches understand how to go from sitting up to lying down. So typically they'll nurse sitting up for a while, and the vast majority of the time they'll then lie down during the nursing session. That's when puppies are at risk. They're at risk when their bitch first goes into the box to lie down, and they're at risk when she's sitting up and she goes to lie down, because that's when they're more likely to get underneath her. So as best you can, you want to help her learn how to lie down well. So how do you do that? One thing you don't do is tell her to lie down. I see a lot of young breeders doing that, telling their bitch to lie down. That tends to stress bitches out. And so they obey, they lie down. And now we have bitches that are lying on puppies because they aren't really thinking about it. They're thinking about you and they're thinking about what you've told them to do. So don't tell them to lie down. Instead, when you see them begin to sink down, do one of two things. You can try and get them up to walk first before they lie down and have them circle the outside edge of the box and show them how to circle the outside edge of the box. If they walk away from their puppies and circle the outside edge of the box, the puppies will go into the middle of the box to follow them. And so now you have the dam on the outside of the box and you have the puppies on the center part of the box. And now when she goes to lie down, the puppies are in the middle. And so it's much safer. That's one. The second thing is when she lies on a puppy, don't freak out, don't yell at her, don't panic. Show her the puppy and show her, like, reach in calmly and tell her, hey, did you see that? And pull it out. There is some very weird disconnect in dogs where the cry that a puppy makes while it's being squished does not result in a response for the vast majority of bitches. They might cock their ear. You know, their puppy's like, ah! And the bitch is like, wow, I wonder what that is. That's really interesting. But they don't get up. They don't try and do anything. The very, very rare bitch will reach down and move her puppy. But the vast majority of them just sit there completely puzzled by what's going on. So we have to kind of assist at that point and draw their attention to it. But if we panic and are screaming at the bitch, now we're going to cause stress in the bitch. She's going to be more likely to panic when she hears that sound, and you are far more likely to lose a puppy to being squished. And remember, doing proprioception exercises in Fit to Be Tied prior to and during pregnancy will help her learn to not lie on her puppies. Then usually by the end of week two, bitches are beginning to stand. They always stand earlier than we would prefer. But again, it is developmental for the puppies. So you're going to be managing weights and doing private nursing sessions and things like that. And then typically by 6 weeks, they're nursing on the run as fast as they can possibly get away from the puppies. And that's kind of how the progression goes.